Hi, welcome. This is the 90-Day Website Mastery Podcast. It's our 53rd episode. Welcome, Pascal Fintoni, my co-host. How are you today?
I'm very well. I feel like we've had a long break, but I was counting. It's not that many weeks, really. So, you know, really pleased to be back. And thank you to our viewers and listeners, whether you're joining us live or on replay.
And this is the companion to our recently published book, Web Proud. In fact, Web Proud is coming on the road in person in Leeds. We're going to be doing a workshop at the end of March. We've got a new favorite tool, haven't we? It's a bit of a best kept secret, I think.
Well, if we've done our job properly, though, people should know that Notebook LM by Google is one of our top favorites. And you're right, you know, what started all those years ago as a webinar, then became a podcast, then became a book, and tons of ebooks and resources, we thought, you know, it's time to go and meet some lovely people who have been our great supporters. So, yes, 25th of March in Leeds for a Notebook LM for Websites special masterclass.
Yeah, looking forward to that. As always, in every episode, we have four segments. We have the You Ask, We Answer, where someone submitted a question and we explore it for you. We've got website stories. This week, on this episode, we're going to be telling you about a conference that we were at recently. We've got the Website Engine Room, where we share a couple of apps or pieces of kit that's going to help you as a website manager make you feel more proud of your website, make your website work harder for you. And of course, we always finish with a website call to action. One simple thing that you could be doing right now to start making your website work so much harder. Shall we get started, Pascal?
Shall we? Let's go with the first segment.
You ask, we answer.
Now, this is an interesting one. So this is literally straight from a webinar that I delivered a few days ago. And so I'm going through a series of sessions, if you will, Johnny, very much like you would. And we were working on our credibility. And case studies was one of the things we discussed. FAQs was another one as well. And so they came back and they were doing a show and tell, the participants. And I've got some of this. So listen, I've written the case studies, a combination of mind, thoughts, and using a bit of AI support, as you recommended. But I'm stuck on the visuals and the photography. You know, it feels like I can't really use photos of people, of my clients. I can't use their premises. I can't use their logo. So I'm stuck. What should I do? What say you, Johnny Ross?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I had a very similar question yesterday. I mean, talk about stars aligning. And as well as layering onto that, as well as not being able to use the images and the brands, the logos, it's about perhaps not even being able to use the name of the person or the name of the business. And potentially, I actually think this puts you in a stronger point, because when we're using the logo, I think a lot of the time we're sort of relying on that to tell the story and that to build the trust. And that doesn't make us work as hard as we would if we can't use the logo. So I think this is about really being sort of quite out there in terms of being generous in what you share, in terms of the impact, in terms of the difference, in terms of the process, in terms of how you've come to where you got to in for this particular product or solution, or whatever that was sold. And so it's a way of really digging deeper into what it was. And then in terms of imagery and pictures, I mean, the first thing is, don't just jump to stock imagery. Would you agree with that, Pascal? We don't really, you know, it's not our favorite, is it?
It's not, though I would say there are some incredible websites that gives you professionally, you know, kind of professional shots. So yeah, move away from stock photography and find platform that we mentioned in other episodes that give you access to professional photographers gifting, you know, their work to small business owners.
Yeah, but where we can go is more illustrative and perhaps even charts, perhaps even making things that show and demonstrate, perhaps laying out the process. Or you might have an image that that talks about the impact. So some kind of graph, we've gone from here to here. You might not be able to talk about revenue changes, but you might be able to talk about how it's gone up in a percentage terms. You might be able to talk about how you've reduced staff retention by 20% and how you can then create some kind of graph to show that. And if anything, that shows that you are data-led, you're thinking about data. And so it's trying to always come up with those numbers. Because in terms of a structure of a case study, we typically think of, you know, if we really really simplify it down. What was the problem? What was the solution? And what was the impact? And when it comes to the impact, it's constantly saying the so what. Okay, so we did this. Yeah, but so what? Well, we did this. Yeah, but so what? Until you get to those numbers. So you can then take those numbers, put them into some kind of illustration and use those type that type of imagery. And then in the solution part of that, talking about the process, the thinking, we perhaps had we were thinking of going three different ways with this particular project. And visually you could show the roadmap in terms of, you know, well, we were thinking of going this way, but that would have been a disaster and would have caused more problems. And we ended up with this route, and this is the impact that it gave. So it's, I think what I'm saying is you end up giving more, explaining more, and that, if anything, builds trust. I've got some thoughts on the name as well, but just Pascal, in terms of imagery, specifically you were asking, what would you add to my thoughts there?
So what I've done then, in the moment, I'm inventing a new term called case story, because I think what people need to understand is that, you know, what is the lesson and what do you want people to remember? So you're going to read the case study. They may watch it, actually. They may listen to it if there's an audio overview. But what are the key messages you want them to retain? And in a way, the images, the visuals need to be an echo of what that is. Do you want them to remember the process you used that is unique to you? Do you want them to remember the impact, as you heard a moment ago, Johnny mentioned? So what do you want them to remember from that case story? Because there's two things. Either you are retelling something that happened in the recent past, or you are showing an example of what could happen as well if you are, for example, a startup business or it's a new offering in the marketplace. So for me, if you talk about case story, I would argue that, to your point, what you described are visuals that normally would be in a blog section. And are we actually inviting ourselves to think of case studies just a bit more creatively, in a way that is more engaging? And then in a way, you free yourself of the shackles of having to exactly match, you know, the case story visual to the building of your customers or the logo of your customers or, you know, the location. And think as well about so many of our customers and listeners and viewers are professional service providers, that there isn't a venue to show for, you know, there isn't. And they may take, you know, shots on their mobile phones, but, you know, they can't use them necessarily without permission. So for me, if you use the term case story, because words are powerful, then your job is to find an illustration, and it can be something you can access online, something you can create yourself or using some support from AI, that is there to kind of be an echo, a whisper about the key lesson you'll take away from reading this story.
Nice. I love the idea of case story. And whilst you were talking, I was thinking, so another imagery that you could use is in terms of context around the industry, around the sector. So you might not be able to use one of the pictures. You know, using a stock image of you know, if it, perhaps it's a manufacturing plant and you're thinking of using a stock image of manufacturing, but it's, again, it's not real. So what you might be better doing is using some kind of illustration that gets it across. So for example, if it was logistics, having, if you imagine like a London tube map that sort of gets across logistics. For finance, it might be more like grids and structural precision or numbers. Manufacturing, it might be more like systems or geometry or, you know, thinking about how you can create something illustrative. And as Pascal said there, with a bit of AI, you've got, you know, so many tools to be able to create something like that very quickly, or even just using where I was saying about stock images is what you don't want is sort of two guys shaking hands or the computer, you know, the laptop on the desk with a cup of coffee. So that's what I was meaning about that sort of real stock image.
Yeah, can I just say, no, those photos of computers with the desks are far too neat. I mean, people can't see because of, you know, of movie magic, but my desk is a horror, and that never matches, you know, those photos online. I mean, I use them, in fairness, you know, I use them because I use them for title slides, you know, for training, because actually there's a lot of space to put text, and that's what they're designed to do. But for me, you know, there's exactly that, which is, so when I used to teach content marketing, particularly the photography, I used to call visual marketing, I used to say, you know, there's two ways you can go. You can go literal. So the case study is about this organization, and literally the photography or the visual matches that. Or you can go lateral, which is what you heard a moment ago from Johnny. So, but what was exciting, so the customer then went ahead and rethought, you know, their approach, but also as a result of which they came up with a better title for the case study because it was more story-led, you know, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, nice. Finally, if I may, in terms of client details, so actually I think that that is a strength as well, not putting the name and the company, because it's an opportunity to show how you are a very, the word's completely vanished, but a very safe space, a very safe place to work with, someone that's trusted. So it might be something using something along the lines of client details withheld due to commercial sensitivity. And I think that actually puts you in quite a powerful place to be able to say, look, you know, we know the client, but we can't tell you because there's commercial sensitivity here. And by the way, other people can trust us. And what you would immediately need to anchor that with is the credibility around actually giving a bit of detail. So detail that's not going to give the client away. But for example, you know, this is an 80 million pound business in a particular sector that are covering three world markets, you know, whatever it might be, but giving a bit of detail in terms of industry or size or market or complexity. And I think if anything, that increases the trust in many layers. So yeah, I don't think this is a problem. I think actually there's a massive opportunity.
I like that last option there. Thank you. And I mentioned that to my clients as well, Johnny.
Should we move to our next segment, which is website stories?
Now, about a week ago, you know, at the time of recording this, you and I were invited to, launch the Digital Knowledge Exchange program in Yorkshire. We went to Leeds Stadium, and you were hosting, and I was delivering the opening keynote and two presentations, one of which we're going to focus on. And you also presented and did the closing keynote. I mean, the organizers, foolishly enough, trusted us to, you know, take care of proceedings. And we had an amazing, amazing day. The participation from people, but also the question. You can see the level of maturity when it comes to digital marketing and AI, which was a theme of the conference. Yeah, just very quickly, your memory and what you've taken away from that day.
Yeah, they did trust us. It was a great day. We covered lots of different topics around marketing, around growth, around businesses really thinking about what they could be doing to grow, but more so how they could incorporate AI, how they could be using AI. I think what I walked away from was the feeling that I have with most businesses right now is that there's pockets of success where people are embracing AI and are powering some of the things that they're doing, some of the strategies, some of the thinking, some of the brainstorming, some of the structure of things. And then there's other businesses that sort of, you know, just haven't even started or they're just playing with it. And then you've got another few businesses that are dead against it, and you know, AI is not going to help, and AI is not going to take over, and this is a fad, and I was left with sort of, I'm not sure you're seeing the future here, and I'm not sure you're engaging with the opportunity that there is right now. So yeah, that was just overall, if I was to sort of think about the some of the thoughts around use of AI, that's, you know, that was just where I was thinking, how I left from the day.
For sure. And listen, when I was doing the opening of Me, Myself and AI, you know, I did say to people, let's embrace our feelings fully. You know, all views and opinions are valid, particularly where we're only 3 years and 3 months from the launch of ChatGPT. But for me, you know, all we are seeing is the echo of the past. I mean, this is the same reaction when social media was first introduced, you know, as a concept in the early 2000s. Prior to that was SEO, prior to that was website. I mean, you and I, you know, I remember when we as marketing employees, you know, I was a young marketing officer, went to my boss and suggested website. And people look at me, you know, saying, well, you know, why? You know, and it's a cost and how much we're going to get back in return and so on. And my argument was, well, let's be an early adopter. We're going to learn so much more that once it gets good and once you have, you know, a sizable, you know, volume of internet users, we'll be ahead of the game compared to trying to do it when it's working for everybody else. So I think that was kind of interesting. One of the presentation I gave was how to undertake your 2026 website health check. And we borrowed from WebRound the book. We borrowed a little from Arnold Bukelem for Website Masterclass, taking place on the 20th of March, everybody, as a quick reminder. And what was fascinating is that it did resonate because everybody has a feeling that the website could do a bit better. Everybody has a feeling or has some thoughts about what could be changing, but sometimes they don't know where to start. So very, very quickly, I did a demonstration, and I was a bit cowardly, so I didn't do live, by the way. Remember, I did some screenshots, because you never know with connectivity. So I did some screenshots of taking a real business, you know, a wedding dressmaker in Northumberland, and going through the prompting and the stages of reflection using Notebook LM for a comprehensive website health check using first impressions, trust elements, and calls to action, which is really what we recommend in WebRound, the book. And then I went elsewhere, and I went into content marketing in the age of AI overviews, and I was showing some workflows. And my aim really during the other time was to get people to not put all their eggs in one ChatGPT basket, but actually to think more of a team and a workflow from ChatGPT to Claude to Perplexity to Notebook LM, and kind of showing that. I must say that people look at me, you know, with stunned look, thinking, really? I said, well, why not? It's all there. It's all free of charge. But also, you need to, as a skilled operator of digital tools, you have to know the strength and the blind spots and so on. And then we did do a session on video very, very quickly, and then we had a massive Q&A. So it was the first time that you and I actually put WebRound as a movement front and center during a presentation. You know, I think sometimes we do suffer from that modesty. So it was good.
Yeah, it gave us a great thread, really. The keynote that I was doing, one of the workshops that I started with was visibility and how you can use AI to think about, well, not even using AI. I mean, you know, this was AI to power it. But in terms of, you know, there's some really easy ways to start getting better visibility quite quickly. So we were exploring PR, we were exploring direct marketing, guest marketing, and we were exploring intro requests as well, referrals, and just, you know, getting businesses to think about perhaps just picking a couple and coming up with something very simple to be able to do over the next 90 days to raise their visibility. And I think businesses really engage with that. I also had a keynote on AI and SEO. So how to be, how are you going to be seen in this new changing landscape of those 10 blue links disappearing from Google, but how are you going to be seen in Perplexity and Gemini and ChatGPT. So that was a good session. What I really did like was businesses were really engaged. They clearly wanted to grow. There was a really great engagement all day. There was a lot of passion in the room. And it was brilliant to see so many startups, people that have got ideas that perhaps have had a change of circumstances in their lives and really want to develop and grow their own business and create something around them that they're passionate about. And that came across strongly. I think we were just helping them unlock how they could start achieving it.
No, absolutely. So it was a full day, you know, and I will say thank you for everybody that lasted the full day. Sometimes with, you know, life commitments and so on, it can be very, very tricky. And yeah, I suppose, you know, thank you to the team behind the scenes at Digital Knowledge Exchange, because you and I turn up, have an amazing day, but there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes when you do event management, for sure.
There certainly is. Let's move to our next segment, which is the Website Engine Room.
Now, in this part of the show, Johnny and I recommend one app each, you know, a bit of software that can make life easier as a website manager or content creator. So, Johnny Ross, what is your selection for today?
Yeah, so this one's a bit more for the technical people out there, or alternatively the website managers that are trying to get across what they want in terms of a design or a look. And this gives a great signpost. So it's one of the largest libraries, an open source library of UI, and by that I'm talking about user interface elements. So buttons, icons, forms, menus, all the things that allow users to navigate and interact with digital products ultimately. And it's a great, it's a brilliant library of all of that, whether it be shapes, whether it be colors, whether it be styles, formats. And what that can really help you do is create better call to actions, better understanding of how to move customers around your website, and be able to talk to designers and developers and say, actually, I've seen this style of form, or I've seen this style of button, or this style of call to action, or this style of menu. This is what I'd like on my website. So I've just realized I've not even mentioned the product, have I? UIverse. UIverse.io is the one that I'm highlighting. It's the largest library of open source UI, community-built library of user interface elements. And that is what I would recommend for this episode.
Now, there's nothing like having a conversation where, you know, there's a discussion based on something you can look at and react to, as opposed to a blank screen and waving your hands around. But I can just say I love the name UIverse.io. I bet, you know, that people out there thinking, damn, I wish I'd thought of that myself, you know. So I wanted to build on the conversation we've had so far. And you and I, one of the highlights of the episode we've done now, this is being 53, is when we did a special on AI overviews, GEO, and the new, you know, the future of SEO. And there is a resource, everyone, you know, that I would recommend you download. And in a moment, I will ask Tony to remind us of the URL. But I suppose the takeaway from the conference, but also, you know, from that special webinar, was the return of long form content supplemented by TLDRs at the beginning, you know, the summaries section. And long form content is not easy at all. So I wanted to remind people that there is a platform that is dedicated to be your ultimate creative partner for long form content, and it's called Claude.ai. And I keep saying to people, I'm not liking it because I can pronounce it properly. It's because generally it was designed for that. There's another side to it, which is about coding, but in the context of SEO, the new SEO, GEO, and building a brand, building trust, you've got to show, you know, your value. You've got to be seen and heard being helpful within, you know, beyond 250 words, you know, to have a bite-sized post. So what you can do with Claude.ai is a number of things. You can think of the structure first and then go away and write it. You can write maybe a medium length version and get Claude.ai to critique it and give you some ideas about how you can expand. But ultimately, you know, what you want to do is make sure that when you use Claude.ai and any other platform, Johnny, that you educate it by your voice and your style. Therefore, you have to show and share examples of your work. And we've got to be careful, because there are businesses out there, Johnny, who have not written anything whatsoever themselves. They've used AI all the way, and therefore they are in no position to educate their assistant about their tone of voice and style. So make sure that, you know, I would say write the draft, you know, get the beginning going, and then go for the long form. And don't be scared, people. When I say long form, by the way, Johnny, I want to be clear. I'm talking 2,000 words. You know, kind of the 2,000 word authoritative piece that you can do once or twice a month. That would give AI overviews plenty to get their teeth into, if they have any teeth. But more importantly, people said to me, you know, no one's going to read that. I said, you don't know that, you know, you'd be very surprised. And in any case, even if you've done 2,000 word article, meaningful article, there's a summary at the top anyway for people who like to scan read. But the fact that you have done the 2,000 word article is impressive. The reading bit is almost, you know, for me, a bonus. But more importantly, we are now operating with an AI overviews first internet.
We are. And that is a great tip. Love it. Very, very fitting for the website engine room. So yeah, I like it. Thank you very much. Let's move to our final segment. And every piece of content, including our podcast, and including everything you do, should always have a call to action. So ours is the website call to action.
This is about the one change or one adjustment you should be making right now on your website. Johnny, what is your call to action?
Well, we need to grow our email list, because people aren't always ready to buy. So we've got to nurture them. We've got to grab their data, and we've got to start nurturing them. People are not necessarily ready to buy. So how are we going to grab their data? We need to create a lead magnet. I can't believe that we've hit episode 53 and not mentioned lead magnets, creating something in depth, something really helpful, a how-to guide, some kind of insight report. You know, it could even be something fun. It, depending on what your business is and depending on what your products or services are, something that fits the audience, something that's really helpful, something that would make them want to give their email address in return for whatever this thing is. So whether that be something to listen to, something to watch, something to read, something that's going to be really valuable and helpful. So what can you create that's going to add value where they want to spend time. And the point being is, give me your email address. We'll send this over to you and make your life easier. And here's some answers. So building your email list, it's something that you could, you know, perhaps, by the way, you've probably already got some lead magnets. You might need to just dress them up a tiny bit. But the call to action really is putting something on there that says, put your email address in here, and you can then have a copy of this call to action for this episode.
And then use your UI verse maybe to challenge, you know, the status quo in terms of the way the page looks and so on, which is great. So mine is kind of three calls to actions into one. I've cheated a bit, but I had to make sure that I had the full journey described. So I've done a lot of work recently on PR push, you know, to increase someone's visibility. You did a full presentation at the conference we mentioned a moment ago. So I'd like people to actually go back, research and refresh their list of local and national media contacts. And I mean by this, Johnny, real people, not just the name of the publication or the name of the radio station, but who are the people that you can then get in touch. And when you get in touch, don't get in touch to say, please run my story. Get in touch to ask for their editorial calendar for the next quarters. They should be organized. And in terms of special supplements or just the running of the magazine, they have already mapped out, you know, at minimum the next quarter, if not, you know, the rest of the year. And knowing what the themes of those kind of different months and quarters are going to be is everything to you, because then you can match your follow-up, you know, email to their content calendar. This is really what you want to do. But also, listen, those media organizations have done their research. If it is in their content calendar, it means that it's a hot topic. So that also could be an inspiration for your own kind of blogging. But for me, I need you, all of you listening live on replay, to be featured even more so than ever before on someone else's platforms. That's part of the SEO GEO of today. And who are they? What are their plans for the future? And then get in touch and match your suggestions as a guest contributor to their content calendar.
Oh, I love that. And they and publications absolutely do have these content calendars, and it's totally worth asking for them. And what a great way to start the conversation as well. You're not pitching to them, you're not saying, write my story. You've got a really easy in there. I absolutely love that. You were mentioning the GEO SEO. We've got a 20 urgent actions that you could take, that you should be taking right now, to ensure that you're optimized for generative engine engines that are out there. And if you simply go to 90daywebsitemarketing.com, you'll be able to get the download in the resources tab of that website. All the links for everything we've talked about will of course be in the show notes anyway, so all you have to do is, whatever device you're on, scroll down a bit and you'll be able to get all the links. And by the way, whether you are live or whether you're listening on the replay, we love you being here, so thank you very much indeed. But we've covered a lot. We've covered a lot today, Pascal.
I'm always surprised. Only half an hour, but we do fit in a lot of information. So, you know, great.
We've helped you think about how you can make your case studies even more powerful by not mentioning names or logos. And we've really helped you think about some of the imagery that you could be using to tell the story. I love it. Case stories. Case stories. Everyone likes a story. And we've talked about how AI can be used to integrate into your marketing. Lots of tips and apps that you could be using right now. And as I said, everything will be in the show notes. Thank you for joining us. It's been good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. If this has been helpful, please do tell your friends and colleagues. We would love for them to join us and start listening as well. It's a wrap for episode 53 of the 90 Day Website Mastery Podcast, your audio companion to the 90 Day Website Mastery Program. Don't forget, we are on the road. We're doing the Notebook LM workshop on the 20th of March in Leeds. In the show notes, you'll have see a link to the Eventbrite. You're very welcome to join us. In fact, we'd love you to be there. For more information, visit 90daymarketingmastery.com, where you can book a discovery call with either myself or Pascal. It's goodbye for now. We'll leave you with a fun video and audio montage to enjoy whilst you review your notes and actions. We'll see you on the next episode. Look after yourselves. Take care.